All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos of San Diego Chargers podcast. I'm with Shane and Will. Brandon will be joining us shortly. How are you guys doing on another weird NFL Sunday?
Doing pretty good.
Bizarre.
Bizarre. Bizarre is the word. The first thing I want to start with, and once Brandon comes in here, we'll kind of go back to it. But I want to kill two birds with one stone here. I want to talk about analytics and points. Because what the hell are we doing with these two things? Like, the Vikings, right? Or not the Vikings. We're just talking about the Vikings pre-show. We'll get to them in a second. But the Falcons. It's fourth down, bro. It's fourth down. You don't need to go for it. You kick the field goal. This is a close game again. This is closer. And then in that second final drive, all you gotta do is kick a field goal and you're done. Not only that, Philly did the same thing and has done the same thing. Dan Campbell has always done this. But if he messes up, guess what the first thing he says in his press conference is? He says, yeah, my bad. No coach freaking says my bad at a presser, unlike Dan Campbell. Will, what is your reaction to this whole analytics versus, yo, just take the dang points?
Yeah, it's usually a thing that's always the big deal with coaches. Usually, they look at a lead. It's like, okay, there could be a chance that we could probably make this, get the touchdown, go to touchdown instead of getting a field goal and be closer because we don't really trust our defense that much, which is kind of a bad deal, to be honest, because honestly, you could just get the field goal, trust your defense, and then continue, you know, the momentum when you get the ball back. So honestly, it's sort of a thing that's usually a common thing that happens with coaches, because there's been times that coaches have looked at these, you know, scores and leads and look at the yards. It's like, maybe let's go for six. Let's be aggressive. Let's just not try to get the field goal and then, you know, let the quarterback run it out. And then we probably lose. And it was like, and then we go back and think like, dang, we should have gone for the touchdown. So I think more so it's like touchdowns more field goals instead of field goals. I feel like field goals have been a lost thing. So, you know, been the thing that's always been a huge thing in football. But yeah, it's been lost right now in football analytics with the field goal, because they feel like field goal is less significant than a touchdown.
Shane, you agree with Will? Field goal is a lost art, especially in clutch moments?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great examples of this. Like, for instance, you know, Philly on Monday night last week, when they decided to not kick that field goal, they missed on the chance to get the touchdown. Had they kicked that field goal and made it, they would have won that game. So, you know, I think it's dumb to be aggressive and go for it when you're really early in the game and you don't have to. You know, I mean, if they were down, if it was like the middle of the third quarter and they were down, you know, by three scores or something, sure, I get it. But it's the first quarter and, you know, it's like 7-3 or what, you know, just whatever the score is. It's like, no, just take the points. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, I don't know. It's weird to me. You know, and there's definitely some coaches who do it more than others. A lot of the guys who were like, not to generalize, but a lot of the coaches who are more of the, you know, yeah, I'm a tough guy, I'm football, you know, like Campbell, Sirianni, Raheem Morris, like those kind of guys. You see it a lot more with them. You don't see it as much with, you know, the other, like, you know, the guys who are more calculated or however you want to describe it. So, but yeah, most of the time, I do not agree with it. Just take the points and keep going.
Yeah, I think that was kind of my biggest takeaway, not only from last week, but this week, especially with the Eagles and Atlanta. On the other side, with the Chiefs, I don't have much to say. Because, Shane, you know this, with us doing the show here, and the only kind of difference is Travis Kelce. He's not being as effective, he's being more of a decoy, he's older. But this is what the Chiefs are in September. And every year we talk about this is our concern, and then whoopee, they make the Super Bowl. Like, this is not something I feel like needs to be scrutinized that heavy, because this is just what they are in September, correct?
Yeah, and even, like, October, too, a little bit. You know, I've noticed with the Chiefs that, you know, like this year especially, they haven't looked very good offensively. Defensively, they've been fine, but offensively hasn't been great. But, you know, I would sit here. If they didn't do this every year, I would be sitting here right now and going, oh, yeah, they're looking pretty bad, you know, like, oh, this is the year that things change. But I can't say that. because, you know, I know just based on the last couple seasons, it's like, this is really is a team where it's like, they can just kind of coast through the regular season. And then when it gets down to it, you get in the playoffs, and they're like, okay, you may have your team, but we have the magician quarterback and the genius head coach. What do you got? Go. And it's just like, whatever. It doesn't even matter. You know, does that mean that they're going to win the Super Bowl again this year? Who knows? Maybe. You know, it's, I mean, statistics would say they won't, just because no one's ever three-peated. But, you know, they're all 3-0 at the end of the day, so despite their struggles, you can't write them off. It's definitely, I feel like they just gotta kind of, you know, find their regular season footing, however that'll look this year for them.
Yeah, a lot of that is going to be the receiving core too. Let's talk about another team, Will, that we get some joy in seeing lose as a collective, in the Dallas Cowboys, that feels like they're coasting, but coasting for the wrong reasons. And then at the end of the game, Jerry Jones, he always has to get on the mic and talk about, we couldn't afford Derrick Henry, and just all this garbage, sickening crap that he says, which is a huge problem with this team. Yeah, they came back, but this team doesn't feel like they have any care in the world about being competitive, honestly, through 3 weeks. Do you feel the same way, Will?
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of feels that way. There's been times that the Cowboys have really, really have shown the true colors.
Hi, Brandon. Welcome in.
Oh, hello, Brandon.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, and with the Cowboys, it's like usually we always see this happen. Usually the defense is lackadaisical, and the offense usually struggle most of the times. This is basically like sort of mirrors what happened with the Packers, with them, the Packers in the playoffs last year. And this game sort of represents that, because usually it's like they have this huge lead, they struggle to put points, but then when it starts going late to the game, then they start scoring, and then it's like a little too late. So honestly, this sort of mirrors that game, and it shows that the lackadaisical, especially in coaching, and also with that Prescott and the defense, I just feel like I don't think they're really wanted. I don't think they really have the heart for it, to be honest. I don't know what's going on as far as mentally with this team, but it shows that arguably I don't think they have a really true vocal leader. I feel like it's like everyone is like a good and, you know their roles and stuff like that, but no one's like a really vocal leader that that really show like the aggression and show that they really want it. So I think that's something that the Cowboys are missing right now.
Here's our week three group vote. Tell me yes or no. Will Mike McCarthy get re-signed by the Dallas Cowboys at season's end? Yes or no?
If I think of Jerry Jones, I'm probably going to say yeah.
Shane, what about you?
I don't know. It's a little early to tell for me. But then again, Jerry Jones is very unpredictable.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about, and not in a good way, you know, we talk about the Cowboys having problems. You know, it's just like any other business in the world where it starts from the top down. If the leadership is bad, the business will be bad. It's simple as that. And, yeah, Jerry Jones is, I mean, I know he's very successful. And, you know, but as owner, general manager of the Dallas Cowboys, he's just not good. So, yeah, and you need good leadership to have a good team. So, I don't know. I mean, I could see him firing him, but I think really at the end of the day, Jerry needs to look in the mirror and realize, like, oh, yeah, maybe I should, you know, be a little more hands off.
Maybe I should stop talking to the media about the opposing team's running back at the end of the damn game.
Yeah, exactly.
Please. Brandon, your vote. Is Mike McCarthy the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys in 2025?
I mean, he shouldn't have been the head coach in 2024, but, you know, Jerry decides to roll with him. I mean, I can't see it. You know, this team, I don't know. Have they started 1-2 under McCarthy in the past few years?
Yes. Yes.
So this is a trending theme, right? Of just constant underachieving. And today, you know, A lot of people are like, oh, well, Dak, you know, threw for almost 400 yards. Yeah, yeah, it was all garbage time. Doesn't matter. But, you know, when I look at this team and I look at how they're run, it's the same problems we've seen year after year after year. It's bad clock management. It's bad, you know, turnovers. It's bad football. You know, you're relying on a less than decent offensive line. You have only one good wide receiver. You have a decent tight end. Okay, whatever. You don't have a running game. Part of it falls on just Jerry Jones as a GM not knowing how to pick players. And, you know, if Jamie Foxx is any indication, we know how Jerry Jones picks his players.
Oh, my God. You brought that up on air. Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah, so we understand how Jerry Jones is an awful GM anyway. And that I mean, the guy literally is senile. He doesn't know. He's not in touch with anything anymore. He's too old to be running this team the way he is, and so it ultimately falls on him and as a whole. But Mike McCarthy is just as bad, and Mike McCarthy cannot be the head coach in 2025. He shouldn't have been the head coach this year. Him and Nick Sirianni were the two names that were on the hot seat, I think, the most after last season. And it's funny, both guys are still here. And neither should be. So, you know, but Mike McCarthy, there's nothing redeeming about him at this point. The thing is, I feel like the same thing when I look at him, like when we talked about Sean Payton last time, how the game has kind of passed him by. I think Mike McCarthy is the same way. The game's passed him by. So, it's time to just move on. I mean, will he be, honestly, with how this seems to be going? I mean, he gave... You know, Jerry Jones gave Jason Garrett a too long of a leash. He'll probably give Mike McCarthy too long of a leash. So he'll probably be here next year, even though we know that he should not be at all.
I am making a very concerted effort this year. However bad it is for our podcast ratings, I could not give two fricks. I am genuinely tired of talking about the Cowboys on this podcast. I am so done. I can't do it. Because we know how this story ends every year. We know. We'll talk about them in the wild card. We'll talk about them in the divisional round. And then when they lose, we'll talk about the same thing over and over again. And this is why Fox should not put KB and Tom Brady on every flipping Cowboys game. Three weeks. His first three games, all Cowboys games. Please, for the love of God, no. No. I don't want this anymore.
Wasn't there a point in the game where there was like an awful, like awkward silence for like 3 minutes?
There was for a little bit, but Brady looked pretty good today. To be honest, he's improving. I just don't want him to talk about the Cowboys anymore. I'm good. Give him some other teams, please. Nobody cares about them. Yeah, nobody cares about the Cowboys. You know who's had better games this year? Joe Davis and Greg Olsen.
Yep.
Like, they've had better games. Oh, by the way,
Davis is my Lord and Savior.
Shane, you can turn your mic up a little bit if you want, actually. So you can go ahead and do that. Yes, you can. Please go ahead.
I turned it down because last week I noticed that I was peaking a bit.
Yeah, as long as you're not peaking, we should be good. I'll keep an eye on it.
Okay.
This behind the scenes.
Meanwhile, Robert, you sound like you're like 30 feet away again.
Do I again?
Yeah.
Is it, there's something wrong with this microphone, I think. Okay, let me do a quick microphone switch, and we'll be good. One sec.
So, no, but wait, Brandon, say that because the audience didn't hear that. What we've done for the past 4 weeks, and by the way, I know it's my microphone now because I adjusted Discord, I adjusted the settings and everything, so it's this microphone. But what were you saying about what it reminds you of, the weird audio difficulties on the show?
Like, what is it? The weird. Oh God. Am I blanking out? Did I miss something?
Live.
Oh yeah, the Bill O'Reilly thing. Yeah, because Christian was like, "Yeah, we're doing live." It's like, I love how it's like that's just become our thing every week now. It's like every time I have technical difficulties, it's like, okay, we're just gonna keep going because why not? Like, we're doing it live.
And honestly, now that I officially know what the problem is, I'm just gonna try to fix this microphone. I'm gonna literally reset it completely. But continuing with doing it live, let's do it live on your Philadelphia Eagles, Brandon. And before I let you go on this, we opened the show talking about the dichotomy between analytics and points, mm-hmm. and now teams like Atlanta. Shane brought this up. Atlanta, Philly, Detroit, right? Those three head coaches. But I want you to start with that piece of this idea of analytics versus points, why coaches like Nick Sirianni are getting it wrong. And I said, you know, Dan Campbell at least opens up to it. Sirianni isn't. Start with that and then build from there from what was a pretty uninspiring Eagles win, actually, today.
You know, it's... I know this pretty much, in, not just with the Eagles, the Yankees just do the same thing, where both Aaron Boone and Nick Sirianni have no game feel. It's just strictly based off analytics. They might say they have game feel, they don't. Because you just know with the way a game is going, when you should take points and when you should just go for it. You know, when you have the right personnel and things out there to do what you need to do. You just know. You should know as a head coach, you know, not based on analytics. You should just know based on how the game is going when to say, hey, we're having a great drive. Even if we don't get it here, we'll back them up. You know, if it's 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2, okay. You know, we got to get the right personnel out there. And we got to, you know, and we got to try to, you know, call a decent play. The problem is it's twofold. It's... Every time with the Eagles, it's never the right personnel out there. It, you know, like Grant Calcaterra and Kenny G cannot be out there on a 4th down. I mean, like that hasn't happened a lot, but that's happened a few times. They cannot be out there. And if it's a 4th and short, I don't like if it like not like, you know, 4th and 1, 4th and 2, that's touch range, or you run the damn ball with Saquon Barkley. Point blank, period. Those are the only two plays I want you calling in that situation. That is it. Because anything else. For some reason, on 4th down, this team insists, and I don't know why Nick Sirianni insists on this. He insists on treating it like a 2nd down shot play, where it has to be all or nothing. And I'm like, all you need is a yard or two, or in some case, or if you want to go for it late in game, okay, maybe you need 3 or 4 yards. But early in the game, when you know both teams are not scoring, and it's spent like in the first quarter, you want to go for it. okay, I mean, you shouldn't have, but I get it. But by the second time, and you're so, you know, we're getting into the second quarter now, especially as we got towards the half, take the points. There's no reason to leave points on the board at the end of the half, especially when both teams are not scoring points. So points are at a premium. If it was a game where it was a shootout back and forth and you want to try to go again, I would kind of understand it more. It still wouldn't be the right call, but I would understand it. But when it's a 3-0 game like it was today, and Nick Sirianni said he called that 4th-and-1 play to Saquon, that fake push. There was 11 seconds left. Even if you picked it up, you would have had to call a timeout. 5 seconds would have came off the clock, and you still would have had to kick a field goal. So I don't understand why you go for it. Like, and last week too, it was a problem last week when he doesn't know when the right time is to say, hey, we're driving here, or we need this here. Let's go for it and get it versus, let's just take the points. So he was he's very inconsistent about his aggressiveness, which I don't like either. It's like, you know, I hate to say this, but it's a common phrase that you know, people will always say to the end of time, either you sit or you get off the pot. Pick one or the other. Or, you know, if you're unsure, chances are you kick it. Because if you're unsure what you're doing, the play is probably a 99% chance of not working. Especially with Nick Sirianni's offense, that won't work. So it pisses me off when I see a game like this today, right? Where it shouldn't have come down to a Saints drive. If you take the 2 field goal opportunities that were given to you, instead of making Jake Elliott then later try a 60-yard field goal late in the game, which could have really hurt you badly, if you would have taken those 2 field goals, that's a 9-point lead. That Saints drive does not matter. Just like last week, if you took the points, Atlanta doesn't win the football game. Like, there's no reason to be aggressive to the point of being stupid. Just because the analytics on 4th-and-3 tells you, oh, it has a 95% success rate, doesn't mean you go for it. You have to have game feel. And he has never had that. Never. Shane Steichen did when he was here, but not him, not Kellen Moore, neither of them do. And it really bothers me because it's holding this team back from where they should be. And it happened again today. And what's crazy is, if you take away the bad route by Devonta, because listen, I don't, you know, Jalen Hurts, did he force the ball? Yes. But that play call was supposed to be Devonta Smith basically going up and cutting in quickly. He went up and then kind of just gave up. He kind of went up and around. That's what caused that interception. If he cuts that off like he's supposed to, that's a touchdown. So, you know, that one is on both of them. Then the fumble happens. That one's inexcusable. Jalen's got to know either take off and run or throw the ball away. And, you know, don't hold the ball out to your side. Fuck it. But other than that, outside of those 2 mistakes, he played almost like he did. He played better than he did in both games combined the past 2 weeks. In today's game, he became a pocket passer. He was 29 of 38, which is an insanely good completion percentage, for over 315, I think it was 319 yards he finished with. That's a really good game. Problem is just that the play calling was so bad that they just couldn't score. Next to the red zone, you know, why is your red zone plays pass, pass, pass? Or why is it a pass, then a run with Kenny G, like a sweep, and then a short pass? Like, that's not going to score a touchdown. So the play calling is really making me angry, because have I blamed Jalen Hurts for some of these throws? Yes. You can't turn the ball over 6 times in not even in 3 weeks. He turned it over 6 times by the end of the second quarter today. So it was really 6 times in the past 2.5 games. So that can't happen. That is unacceptable on every level possible, and that's why I hate the way he's playing right now. But he does still have those flashes of brilliance where I'm like, that's MVP Jalen Hurts. That's MVP Jalen Hurts. That's MVP Jalen Hurts. And when they needed it most, he was on target today. he knew, you know, when to check out of play, change the protection, and get a good play call that, you know, especially with Saquon Barkley, a chance to run with the offense today, which he did again. So there were a lot of good things in the second half, but this is still a team for 3 weeks that is still struggling to find it, and I'm getting really annoyed by it because you saw what happened to the Falcons tonight. They looked horrible. They were awful tonight. They were awful. And that what the Chiefs did to them tonight is what Philly should have did to them last week. That. So, you know, they held Bijan Robinson in check. Bijan ran for 7 damn yards a carry against our defense. But yet today, we held Alvin Kamara to 3.3 yards a carry. Where the hell was that kind of play last week? Where was that effort last week? And like today, you know, Vic Fangio talks about the way he wants the defense to play. That's the defense we've been wanting for years. The way they played today was flawless. That was flawless defense. That was gorgeous. I mean, outside of the C.J. Gardner-Johnson touchdown, that was gorgeous execution across the board on every level. So that's what I want every week. The problem is with this team and the Falcons and the Cowboys, it's a lot, the Cowboys, Ravens, all this stuff, it's too much inconsistency across the board. And a lot of it, goes back to Nick Sirianni. The play calling is bad. The situational awareness is bad. He doesn't know when to take points. His aggressiveness, he's either too aggressive or not aggressive enough. I mean, and more times it's been too aggressive to the point of being stupid, because it is. Like, I wanted him fired after last year. I don't care that we're 2-1 and should be 3-0. I don't care if we have a winning record. He should still be fired. I don't care if this team makes the playoffs. He should still be fired. They should be a Super Bowl contending team, and it doesn't look like it for 3 weeks. And it's mostly because of him. Again, just like it was last year. So, you know, I'm fed up by it. I mean, I'll take the win, but was it ugly. Oh, I'll take it, but man, that can't happen again next week. Next week, you got the Buccaneers, who played awful today against the Broncos, who only put up 7 points. You know, they're coming back down to earth. You know, they don't have the speedy guys that the Saints have or that the Falcons have. They've got a lot of guys who are older. Godwin, Evans, you know, Baker, more of a veteran. Like, you know, that defense is hurting a little bit. They're a little bit banged up. Next week, and I believe the Eagles opened up as 2.5-point favorites for next week on the road. Next week, you have to go to Tampa and put a full 60 together. The defense and the offense so far through 3 weeks have not been on the same page. They have not. Either 1 week it's the offense and the defense didn't show up like it was the first really 2 weeks. And then this week it was the defense and no offense until the very end of the game. So next week, you're facing probably your easiest opponent yet. So you've got to beat them. I mean, and the thing is, you need it because you're not going to have Devontae Smith probably next week with a concussion. AJ Brown's out 1 more week. I mean, well, potentially they could try to push him to play. We'll see what happens this week. It's still early yet. You know, we're still going in. We still got 1 more, you know, 2 more games to play tomorrow night. We still got to see what happens. But him and Smith are most likely out. Basically, what you did today and why I need to see that run game, pound Saquon Barkley. If I don't care how bad you have to do it, force feed Dallas Goedert because he's a monster when he gets the ball, and just be smart with the football like you were in the second half. And then just, you know, you do those things, you should beat, you know, the Bucs by 3 scores. You should. That's not a high-scoring offense, the Buccaneers. They're not. So, you know, and their defense can only do so much. You know, it might help that they're facing limited weapons in Philly, but that's besides the point. We'll talk about that later in the week. But I need a full 60 out of this team. I need a full 60 from Nick Sirianni because his head is never in it for a full 60, and that's what this comes down to, period.
Yeah, let's move on to games I don't want to discuss for the week. Let's go Chargers-Steelers. Yeah, I'm throwing the Chargers on the don't want to discuss list. I haven't gotten a good look at you at all, like at all, and you lost to the Steelers, who, by the way, the Steelers are 3-0. Can we please? They're 3-0. What is going on?
It's all defense. It's all defense.
Yes. Packers Titans. Guess who was the best quarterback in the Titans locker room last year? It was Malik Willis. Done.
Yeah, Malik Willis.
Done.
Better than Mayo Man.
Better than Mayo Man, who is terrible. I'll add this because I think Shane might have something to say on this. I said that Mayo Man is worse than Bryce Young. He is the worst quarterback in the league right now, and you agreed with me. Why did you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I mean, well, the point you made is, you know, at least Levis has some weapons, and yet he still looks terrible. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Bryce Young, like, no offense to those guys, but, I mean, look what he had to work with. Granted, wasn't really a problem for Andy Dalton today, but...
and we'll get to that. Andy freaking Dalton.
But, yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that guy was looking like he did in 2014. But, yeah, no, it's yeah, I was never high on Levis. I just always thought, you know, he was one of those quarterbacks coming out of college who was just all flash and show and no substance. And
his substance was mayo.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, and yeah, sure enough. You know, you get guys like him, Zach Wilson, you know, some other people that I won't name yet, but, you know, you put them in the NFL, particularly in situations where they don't necessarily have the best support system, and they always fail. So, you know, it's like, What else did we expect here? Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
That's all I'm gonna say about that for now.
Yeah. Giants Browns. What the hell was that? You both are awful. That game was entertaining and pukeable at the same time. Bears Colts. Two of the youngest quarterbacks in the league. They both played like that, it.
Bro. I gotta say something, Rob.
Go ahead.
That
go.
Colts and Bears game was so funny, man.
Oh no! Like, both quarterbacks played like young quarterbacks. That's what happened.
Yeah. It was like the mistakes that they made was funny, especially with Caleb Williams, with how he just wildly throws stuff. I'm like, bro, what the?
Shane, you're right on Caleb Williams. Done. You're right. That's basically the point here.
Well, it could change, but yeah.
Lions Cardinals, wildly entertaining defensive game. Quite bizarre.
They cost me my parlay.
They did? Oh, my Lord. What was your parlay?
It was short. It was only three legs because my friend was trying to add more last night, but he couldn't add more because something had happened with my DraftKings app and had crashed. So it was only three legs. It was Aaron Jones, most rushing, or I think it was Aaron Jones, 60-plus yards. No. It was Aaron Jones anytime TD. He got that. It was... like, what was it? Some sort of, like, I think like Alvin Kamara, like 40 receiving yards. I think he got that. And then it was, Marvin Harrison Jr. Over with 69.5 yards. I needed him to get 70. He ended up with 64.
Jesus.
And the thing is, and the worst part is Kyler Murray didn't target him at all on their last possession that they had. Didn't target him at all. He targeted him once on the sideline when he was just blanketed by a DB throw was over his head. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
I'll be honest. It kind of looked like week one Kyler Murray. He missed a lot of throws.
He looked terrible.
Yeah, it was rough. Lions weren't that great either, but they'll be fine. Rams, last one. All I'm going to say for Niners Rams is what Sean McVay said at the end of the game in his press conference. Holy shit. Because holy shit, that was a fun game. So that's the games we're not going to focus on. Let's focus on the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton. What the hell? Just what a performance. Will, I'll start with you. What does this mean for Bryce Young's future? Because I think it means a lot more than we think.
Yeah, honestly, there has been sayings that Well, at first the Panthers said they were going to keep him, but honestly, they could change. You know, we've seen, you know, offices in the NFL and the league change their minds like that because, you know, it's a business. But there's also been rumors of him, a bunch of teams that are looking to acquire Bryce Young. I forgot the names. There was a list.
Miami, the Rams, for some reason. There's one more.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, honestly, if it was up to me, I would actually do it, man, because honestly, you look at next year's draft class, honestly, they had a rich full of quarterbacks that have great potential. And I feel like the Bryce Young experiment, I think David Tepper and that organization, I think they should just buckle down and say, like, hey, we screwed up. We screwed up with the trade, which I knew was going to happen because I even said it a couple of years ago when they did it. And honestly, I think it was best for them to just move on. And I feel like that's the really direction for them to do. But honestly, I think it's going to be up to whatever the Panther organization, what direction they want to do right now. Because right now they got something with Andy Dalton because he's showing that he's capable of putting up points with that offense. And it did look bad for Bryce Young, but honestly, it doesn't really look bad for Bryce Young. It actually just shows that Bryce Young still got some development to do, and they couldn't develop Bryce Young perfectly well. So honestly, that really screwed up his development. So honestly, for the future, I could really say it's really up the air for Bryce Young. But honestly, if I was the Pantherization, I would just admit the loss and just try again, because we've seen it all with other organizations like the Texans and others. So that's what I would do.
Yeah, Brandon, I think it was really interesting, and you said this as well in our chat, but this was also all over social media. We finally realized what the problem was with the Panthers, and it was Bryce Young.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, and it happens. It's funny. It happens a lot more than we think. I mean, because you know, there's always that one game where a backup quarterback will come in and play better than the starter, and I'm like, oh my god, this, like, you know, Andy Dalton had an outstanding performance, but you also got to remember it's the Raiders. Like, it's, you know, it was still a great performance, especially for someone late in their career like he is, who, you know, didn't even expect to start this season. You know, it's a storybook kind of day. But, you know, but Bryce Young, I mean, he can't make the throws that Andy Dalton was making today. He can't, you know, he can't see, you know, he doesn't know how to get the ball out as quick as Andy Dalton could today. Andy Dalton, you know, and it's like, it's weird that, I mean, we were talking about, you know, he needs a better, you know, he needs just better talent around him, all that stuff. I mean, Andy Dalton did, you know, with the same talent that Bryce Young's had for 2 years, he did more today than Bryce Young has done in a year and a couple games combined. So it's, you know, at that point you have to look at it and be like, Bryce Young is not the guy we thought he was. Or I thought he was, you know, that he was going to become out of, you know, because you saw him in college, you thought he was going to be somewhat decent. A lot of people thought, obviously, you know, top quarterback, you know, him and CJ Stroud. I mean, CJ Stroud's far better. I mean, CJ Stroud had a bad game today, but CJ Stroud's a far better quarterback, and we knew that, you know, for a long time. I mean, I even said coming out of the draft, I don't see it in Bryce Young. The guy is too small, too skinny, and the only reason he was any good in college is because you're hitting wide open receivers at Alabama, because Alabama's playing, you know, Texas State A&M University every week. So, you know, it's a lot different in the NFL when you're playing actual professionals, you know, that know what they're doing. But Bryce Young, I mean, a young quarterback is not going to be able to change protections. Like Andy Dalton, you know, probably has a lot more. Obviously, with his experience, can change protections better, can take command of an offense more, and that comes with experience. So I won't fault Bryce Young for that. But Bryce Young, you know, is just not the quarterback. Not even, like, it's crazy that we're actually saying in 2024 that Bryce Young is not the quarterback that Andy Dalton is, as if Andy Dalton is some sort of magical great quarterback, because he's not. But But yeah, Bryce Young just seems to be the problem all along. He can't read a defense. He just can't throw the ball away at times. He holds onto the ball too long. Too many, just turning the ball over like crazy. It's a lot of mistakes that a rookie would make. I mean, we're in his second year, but it's crazy that we would, usually when a good quarterback has a sophomore slump, we know it's a sophomore slump. He was bad last year, and he's even worse this year. So, I mean, I hate to say that it could be the end. I mean, teams are going to adjust Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's, Linsanity run here is not going to last forever. But, it might last another week or two, and everybody's going to praise Andy Dalton as, like, a comeback player of the year from sucking, like we did with Baker Mayfield. But Baker Mayfield is 10 times the quarterback that Andy Dalton is. But, but Bryce Young definitely was the problem all along. That's for sure.
Before I go on to Shane, I think it was interesting hearing Antonio Pierce talk about players make big decisions on the field. We're going to make business decisions as well. I think that's incredibly savage, and that's just Antonio Pierce being Antonio Pierce. It's exactly what he should say, because that was a brutal performance. Shane, I'll finish off with you and talk about the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton, rifling it up.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw today was just was a guy who is, definitely past his prime. There's no doubt about it. But this is a guy who has experience, who has seen a lot more in this league than Bryce Young has, obviously. And, he just, not like Brandon said, not that Dalton is amazing, but he just, he has a better arm than Bryce Young. He's bigger, which, I know that shorter quarterbacks can work in the NFL, but I mean, when you see Bryce Young, he looks small.
He looks like he's 5'8".
Yeah, because, part of it is because it's like, when you look at guys like, Russ or Kyler or Baker, who are, under six foot, the reason those guys worked better is because, for some of them, they have great mobility, which Bryce Young doesn't really. So they can, if they can't see over their linemen, they can escape and run away or whatever. And then, like Baker, he, even though he's on the shorter side, he doesn't look small when he's out there, because he's got long arms, and he's so, it's like, he makes it work. But there's videos of Bryce Young literally having to jump as he throws.
Oh my god, that was all over last week.
Yeah, to complete a pass. That's like, that's bad. I think it's just, it'll be like the Niners with Trey Lance, just cut your losses, and it just didn't work out. Oh well, but there's nothing else you can do. I'm sure if they want to trade him, they can. There's a lot of dumb teams out there who will give up picks for him because they're like, he's the first overall pick, he's probably going to be great, this, I think at the end of the day, this is just another, yet another awful trade that was made. It seems like there's been a lot of them in the last 3-4 years. Maybe it was something in the water during COVID, I don't know, but like, for whatever reason, we've had a lot of really lopsided trades that just totally backfired. Like this, like the Deshaun Watson thing, Russell Wilson to Denver, Trey Lance. I mean, it's just, you know, so on and so forth.
And we're just signing quarterbacks here. There's more in their positions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill. I mean, you know.
Yep. Yep. Let's speaking of quarterbacks, let's do the young quarterback report. This step right up for Shane's critique. Bo Nix, after an impressive day. Go ahead, Shane.
Bo Nix.
Brandon's favorite guy gets on the hot seat. Go ahead.
My hero.
I'm happy for this guy. I mean, you know, it was a bit of a slow start for him, no doubt about that. But when I watched Denver the first 2 weeks, even though Bo wasn't playing great, I was like, there's something here, because yes, he's making a lot of mistakes, but it's like, I think a lot of it's not really his fault, just because in these awful situations with the pocket collapsing or receiver not being open, he just has to try and make a play. But, you know, regardless of that, we still saw him having pretty good command over the offense and still, you know, being able to move the ball, even if it didn't lead to much success. Well, today, you know, no touchdowns still, but no picks, no sacks. I mean, he just was doing what a Sean Payton quarterback should do. You know, and I think part of the problem, too, is like, on the road in Seattle, that's a very tough place to play. And especially now with their seemingly new and improved defense. And then against Pittsburgh, which also very tough defense. So he's had a tough start in terms of opponents. And I think he's really handled it pretty well, all things considered. So, yeah, gets the win here. Happy for him, you know. Let's just see if he can build on this.
Yeah, good stuff. Brandon, do you have any thoughts on your boy Bo?
You know, he did what he needed to do today. I mean, he didn't throw for a ton of passing yards, but man, a 69% complete percentage, you know, pretty good. 85 overall rating. You know, not bad. You know, didn't throw for any TDs, but he didn't need to. You know, he took what that defense gave him, but that he did well. He did have a rushing TD, which was nice to see. But you know, and I mean, hey, not 9 rushes, 47 yards. You know, not a bad day at the office for a guy that's not really a running quarterback. Even though he can do it. But yeah, like, you know, that's a good first step for him. Is, you know, limiting the turnovers. I like to see it. You know, February 2000, brother, just like me. So, you know, I'm proud of that guy. I'm proud that, you know, he's taking a good first step into the NFL. I mean, because Caleb Williams through 3 weeks hasn't looked good. You know, a lot of the younger quarterbacks through 3 weeks haven't looked good. Him included for the first 2 weeks, but this week was a good first step for me, and he'll definitely build on it, like Shane said. So I'm excited to see what he does next.
Really, really quick, fantasy performance of the week. Juwan Jennings, 46.5 PPR points. Fucking insane. Absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. Will, let's talk about your Seahawks. Pretty easy win against a undermanned Dolphins at the quarterback position. What was your impression? Will, go ahead. Are you? Is your mic working?
Oh, Robert, you totally cut out for a second.
I did cut out. Yeah. Will, go ahead and talk about your Seahawks. Go ahead.
Oh, is he muted?
Did I cut out again, bro? How is this possible?
No, you didn't that time.
I didn't that time? Will, we're doing it live. Shane, you can get started on Seattle.
Yeah, another good win for Seattle, 3-0 in the Mike McDonald era. Love to see it. But you know, I still have my reservations. I mean, you know, look, this is a lot of people are gonna go, oh well, you know, 3-0, they're kicking ass and whatever. It's like, yeah, but they played Denver with a rookie quarterback's NFL debut, New England, and Miami on their third string quarterback. So
Tim Boyle, we preach. Tim Boyle, we preach.
Yeah. So like, I'm not ready to say quite yet that, like, oh yeah, this team's elite, you know. Because I need to see it against a good team. And they're going to have that next week against Detroit.
Monday night, baby.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the first real defensive line they're going to face. You know, guys like Aiden Hutchinson. And that's really been the biggest thing that's held them back, in my opinion, is the offensive line play has been awful. Which I don't know how, because like it was already bad last year. And they upgraded at center and left guard, and then somehow are doing worse. It's like, what? Makes no sense. But anyways.
Yeah, Will, is your mic working?
I mean, the offense, you can just tell in the play design. It's a lot more creative. It's, you know, it is a lot more vertical, which is good. I mean, you got some pretty quick receivers, so why not use them?
I will.
With the offensive line, they just have no time to let plays develop. So that's really my only thing. Otherwise, I'm satisfied with this team right now.
Yeah, 3-0 is 3-0. Let's see. We'll pop back in. Are you set now, Will?
Yeah, I believe so.
All right, go ahead, Will. Continue with what Shane said, because it's a good win, but it is the Dolphins.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, it was. Even if Tua was there or not, I don't think it was mostly a challenge, but. Honestly, I would take the win. Hey, 3-0 is pretty good. Better than, you know, the other records in the league right now. So, honestly, we're going to... I know we're versus Detroit. Honestly, Detroit, they're, to be honest, they're like, they're up and down in most points. But I still have a little bit of confidence in them. I know it's in a primetime game as well. This is first primetime for the Seahawks, so... Honestly, if I believe in any defense, I believe in Mike Donald and his defense. And also we got to see about these injuries. I think that's only like the biggest concern right now, because I know Larry Williams is, I know he's injured, and I know Byron Murphy is injured. We got to see about those updates. But I think as long as we got at least help from the interior and we still got those two guys, I feel a bit confident in our defense. And then the offense, I feel like we have a decent type of offense. I know the offensive line has been up and down most of the time. And I hope we get Kenneth Walker back at least by this for this primetime game. But we shall see. But I do
But I do have still have faith in my Seahawks, even versus a better competition with the Lions. But honestly, I think it'll all determine if we can at least stay healthy for when we face the Lions. So that's not the biggest thing, is if we can stay healthy for those big time matchups.
Yeah, speaking of big time matchups and big time wins, the Minnesota Vikings get it done again. And Shane brought up a really interesting point. So we're going to do another round table for this, starting with Shane. Are the Vikings the best team in the NFL through 3 weeks?
Sounds ridiculous, but I think they might be. I mean,
I'm trying to think, and I think you're probably right.
Like, I'm sorry, but I mean, you know, you look at all the teams that are 3-0, and I think right now Minnesota would beat all of them. So I think by default, they got to be. Which I never, ever thought I would say that at any point this season. But the NFL is crazy, and here we are. Granted,
Sam Darnold is the leading MVP candidate right now, by the way. There's not even a question.
Oh, I know. They've had their, you know, week one against the Giants. Yeah. And then week two was, it was another snooze. Who did they play in week two? I can't remember.
The 49ers.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was a snooze because they flipping dominated them.
Well, yeah. But then, I mean, that's what I mean. You know, it's like they took a team that most people were considering a Super Bowl contender and made them look stupid. You know, so there's that, and then another team that was 2-0 in Houston that most people picked to win beat them 34-7. They never had a chance. I think, yeah, I mean, I think right now they are probably the best team in the league, and you know, it's only week three, so that won't last in all likelihood, because this is what happens every year. It's like there's one team that's the best team in September, and they kind of fade away, or they don't fade away, but they just, you know, they go back to just being like just a good team, but not the best team. And then like in October, there's another new team. It's like, oh, they're the best ones, and then they kind of fade, you know. So, yeah, but. I can't think of who else it would be though right now.
Brandon, I'll let you go. Sam Darnold, MVP candidate, leading right now. Do you think that? And also, are the Vikings the best team 3 weeks in?
I think he's leading, but to Shane's point, there is one guy who's right there with him, and that's Saquon Barkley.
Saquon, so, he's not going to win an MVP because it's a quarterback award. But I hear you.
I mean, He should.
Come on, Brandon.
He at least should be in the conversation. Over Darnold, bro, right now?
No, but look at the numbers. That guy's on pace for like 1,800 yards rushing. So it's right. I mean, listen, that's not going to last forever, but neither is Sam Darnold's run. But I think right now you can make a case for my boy. But I do think that through the first 3 weeks, They took down in a Niners team and no one gave them a chance to beat. You know, week one, you know, they destroyed the Giants. But we thought they'd beat the Giants, not destroy them, and they did. They're just like, I don't understand how you know the Texans only put up 7, but that's just impressive. Like, the, you know, we thought the Vikings had no defense. I mean, through the first 3 weeks, they've had a damn defense. But Sam Darnold is putting up impressive numbers. I said, you know, Darnold's experience in San Francisco could come in handy here. You know, that change, it could have changed, you know, his little cup of coffee in San Fran could have changed his whole mindset, honestly, changed the whole trajectory of your career even.
I don't think it'd be this much.
Oh, yeah. But this is impressive. It's 4-1, TD to interception ratio. That's insane. A passer rating, rating of 117.3 right now. Almost a 68% completion percentage. Almost 700 passing yards on the season, which is crazy because even though he's dominating, he's not the passing yard leader, which is actually crazy to think about. He's like fifth or something like that. But those are pretty damn good numbers so far. I mean, we were sitting here saying, Justin Jefferson is going to hate the fact that he's throwing to him. And it's like, oh, no, he's not. No, he's not at all.
It's the best deal in the league right now. I wrote this on my blurb because I covered the Vikings game this morning. I was like, that's the best duo in the NFL. If you have Sam Darnold or Justin Jefferson on your fantasy team, you are fucking happy right now. Are so happy.
And this just furthers the conversation. If he continues to play like this even more, the thing I brought up in week one, what the hell do they do with J.J. McCarthy?
If Sam Darnold wins the MVP, you're trading J.J. immediately. Just are.
That would be hilarious.
It'd be absolutely
I mean, you can't hold on to him. Well, because JJ doesn't shouldn't be a backup, because he needs to prove himself. And it's like if this was a guy who's been in the league for a couple of years and you don't want to give up on him and he gets hurt, then you keep him as a backup maybe. But I mean, you're gonna have to. Yeah, you're just gonna have to. If Darnold keeps balling out like this, you can't get rid of him. You just can't. You can't mess up a good thing. I mean, the Vikings over the past, 6-7 years have had, 4 different starting quarterbacks? Or maybe more? I mean, you had Case Keenum. You had Sam Darnold now. You've had Kirk Cousins. They had Josh Dobbs at one point. Like, there's so many guys that they've had play for them. And it's like you need that consistency. No matter who's the guy over JJ McCarthy, they're gonna have to stay. So JJ is unfortunate, but you can't keep him around.
Yeah, Will, what's your whole retrospective on the crazy run the Vikings are on currently?
Yeah, with the Vikings, I believe that. Sam Darnold has shown that, and like we said multiple times, that when you get out of the Jets and get out of a lot of the Carolina Panthers, it's basically you're basically in paradise. Like same thing with him, same thing with Geno Smith, and well, mostly with the Jets one with Geno, but Sam Darnold's the Jets and Panthers and. Same thing with Baker Mayfield, most with the Panthers. But honestly, with Sam Darnold, it shows that, honestly, Sam Darnold possibly might not be a bust, that he is capable of being a good quarterback in the league if you give him the right pieces, situation, and coaching. And Sam Darnold's proven that because we thought Sam Darnold was just going to be the steady guy while, next season with J.J. McCarthy. And honestly, now it's showing that probably Sam Darnold could be the QB1 for the future for the Vikings because Sam Darnold is not that old. And
he's younger than Burrow, which is insane.
That's insane. No way.
Yeah.
That is weird.
Yeah, and now Sam Darnold is going. Now Sam Darnold's possibly right now is one of those quarterbacks, and I do consider him to be a top contender, possibly for MVP if he continues this role. But right now, it's still like 3 games, still early the season, and I'm not gonna put too high on the Vikings. But this is a great start. But honestly. If you continue the trajectory, or at least even during loss as well, I could see Sam Darnold possibly become a Pro Bowler if he keeps this up. But as an MVP candidate, yeah, I could see it. But is continue on this league, if Sam Darnold could continue this, then we possibly could put him into the conversation. Same thing with Baker Mayfield, though. Baker Mayfield did lay an egg. That was only one game. But honestly, it really shows that, honestly, in this season, showing that some of these dead-to-right quarterbacks are showing that they could hang in this league and be a capable starter in this league.
Yeah, or even more than that. And by the way, I'm going to announce a new award on this show right now for Pro Bowl week. Because the NFL instituted this random dumb thing of the comeback player of the year has to be a guy who's injured. We're going to keep that as an award, but we're going to add a comeback player of the year state your case award, which is state your case on any guy in the league that you think should be comeback player of the year, because I thought the new rule is stupid. So we're going to do that. And Will, it is time to bid you adieu as we are going to do Gone Girl. But thank you for joining us as always, my friend.
Yeah, no problem. See you guys later.
All right. And Shane, we are going to talk about one of the most distressing, anger-inducing films we've ever done on this show in Gone Girl. I was not expecting that. But props, it was great. Go ahead on why you picked it.
So, it's funny. I saw this movie in the theaters.
Oh my God!
God, man.
Yeah. Back in 2014 when it came out. Because my mom wanted to go see it with...
Oh no!
No, bro, no, don't.
No.
And so she said, do you want to come too? And I mean,
oh, God.
I just knew it was kind of like a, you know, mystery, whatever, about a girl disappearing, whatever. And, you know, I was just like, okay, sure, I guess, you know. Free movie, why not? And,
and
level of anxiety I felt in that theater, I was like, oh my God. this movie, and I was telling you guys about this because I rewatched this movie and I was like, I forgot how much anxiety this movie gave.
Yeah.
And I say that in a good way.
No, we're saying all this stuff in a good way. Please don't misconstrue that.
Yeah, because that's the kind of emotion that this thing evokes from you. Yeah, this movie's crazy.
That's a mild way of putting it.
Yeah. You know, and it was... It's really well done, though. I mean, it's David Fincher who... I mean, he rarely misses. Like, let's just be real. The only movie of his that I can think of that I really don't care for is Fight Club. Hot take, I know.
Oh.
But otherwise, I mean, he just makes banger after banger. You know, and this was no different. I mean, this, you know, I think this is the best performance of pretty much everybody in this cast in their career.
Mm-hmm. Can I make a quick pause on that? You know what this movie made me think of? Can we stop putting Ben Affleck on People magazine covers and give him some actual love as an actor? Please? Please?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this is his best performance. I think it's Rosamund Pike's best performance. I think it's... what's the actor's name? His attorney.
It is. Oh my God. It's Tyler Perry, isn't it?
Yes. Thank you.
Neil Patrick Harris was great in this as well.
Yeah, although I felt like he was kind of the weak link of the cast.
Yeah, but... I still think he was better in How You Met Your Mother, but I think that was kind of the intention of his character.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, aside from all that, you know, I think what this film does so well is put things in perspective. And what I mean by that is, you know, we always well, not always, but we read about cases like this in media sometimes.
And we watch true crime shows and true crime podcasts and all this crap.
Yeah, or like, you know, we watch, you know, 2020 on whatever channel it's on. You
ABC.
Know, stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dateline NBC, 2020, ABC.
But we rarely see the inside look away from the cameras and like how people actually deal with this. And I feel like this is a very realistic look at it. I mean, you know, it's you really feel the stress he goes through as people start thinking that he killed her, and just seeing that he is growing so frustrated, and everyone's like, what are you getting all angry about? You know, are you hiding something? You know, and it's just this constant, like, anxious feeling. It's like, oh my gosh, you know. And then when she returns, you know, first of all, I thought it was a little, I remember when I was first watching it, she, you know, she comes back about halfway through, roughly. And, you know, I figured that she would, you know, they would find the answers they're looking for at the end, because that's how this normally goes in mystery type stuff like this. So the second she came back, I was like, oh. Then I started thinking, I was like, okay, if she's already back, did she do this? Because, like, why else would they have her return at this point of the movie? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, sure enough, things start to unravel, and you realize that she's crazy, and then...
Mm-hmm.
And then he fucks his life up even more than it already was.
Right. I totally sympathize with him feeling stuck and not knowing what to do in a situation. Not this extreme. I haven't been there, thankfully. But you know, I just imagine myself in that situation, and it's like, it's like, yeah, you want to get away, but you also don't want to poke the bear. And it's like, what do you do? And I think they just explore the reality of this really well, and just how annoying the media can be in situations like this.
How flip-floppy they can be. The power of the media is powerful, man. Like, the power of the media is powerful. It's weird to say it that way, but it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, yeah. Anyways, there's a lot I could say, but I'll hear your guys' thoughts first.
I'm going to quickly comment on one thing that Shane brought up before we go to Brandon, which is the shifting of perspective, right? Because in the first half of the movie, you think that Ben Affleck's character is, like, abusive and all this shit, and then it completely shifts. And then the media is also doing that same shifting. So the perspective is incredible. Brandon, is this your first time watching this film?
Yeah. I remember the trailer for it when it was coming out. I remember being confused by it, and I was like, what is this about? I remember everybody in my high school was like, especially every girl was like, oh my God, I love this movie. So I always thought it was like being a real chick flicky, and I'm like, okay, well.
And then you watch
And now what? Yeah, and I was like, my God, I am disturbed. But I'm like, well, thank God I didn't watch it, because it's not my kind of movie. But I was like, my God, like, this is like so gross on so many levels, but like gross in like a disturbing kind of way. But like, you can't look away from it. It's really, really like it is a very unsettling movie in all the right ways. I mean, did this movie win any awards?
Uh, I'll look. I know it got some critic choice, but like bigger awards, I have to look.
Because Rosamund Pike should have won like several awards for her acting in this movie.
Let's see. Academy Awards. Elizabeth Pike won for, or didn't win, got nominated for Best Actress.
You mean Rosamund Pike?
Or Rosamund Pike, yes, yeah. I'm still trying to learn how to say her name, but...
I want to know who the hell beat her out, because my god. But it... Oh, like, the... Neil Patrick Harris's death in this movie is unsettling.
It's freaky.
Oh, it. I was like, oh man. I was like, I can't look away. But I'm like, it's so just disturbing. I have to look away. I don't want to. And I'm like, oh, it's so goddamn it's gross. But it's like a stomach. It's weird. It is a stomach turner, but at the same time, it is very much a head scratcher, and it leaves you just wondering. I mean, that's what a psychological thriller should do. But I knew at some point we were going to get to a movie in any, between either last year or this year, whatever it may be. I knew that it wasn't going to be all cut and dry, sunshine and roses all the way through. But my God, I was not expecting that.
Holy shit.
It's like, it is like most thrillers nowadays, like that it's still a modern thriller. It only came out 10 years ago, but that is one of the more gory thrillers and more just like disturbing ones I've watched. I don't really remember a lot of really more modern thrillers being that kind of like just warped. It's like most psychological thrillers, you can kind of just read through, like they're like thin as tissue paper. Like you can just see everything coming from a mile away. This one is just, to play it so well, to not miss, basically have it be just a straightforward mystery and have her return, basically halfway through the movie. And then you find out, wow, this was all her planning. That's definitely different than a lot of modern thrillers. There's always been that element of thriller of like, oh, the main, like the character that you think you should be sympathetic towards in the beginning ends up being the real villain. There's a weird thing like with Ben Affleck's character where it's like, you have to believe by the end of this movie that he's just a masochist. That this guy's just like a glutton for punishment, it feels like. Because, by the end, they announced basically proudly announced they're having a child, and they kind of like reconcile and all this stuff. And I don't know how he's basically like being seduced by the fact that she's evil. A real kind of like witchy woman, which is just weird. it's really sadistic, but my God, it's definitely, it's one of those movies where it's like, it's not going to be, I think, high on my list, but it's like by the end of the year, because I'm pretty sure we're going to get into a lot of good ones that are going to make it hard for me. But I feel like if I had to. Oh, I mean, I love the fact that it shows also, because we are, at the end of the day, we are journalists, especially me and you, Rob. So it's like, we understand,
don't let me into there.
What?
I said, don't let me into there.
Yeah, no, I'm not putting you in there. I'm not.
What I realized watching this movie, Brandon, is how fucked up the media can be. How just insanely statistic and fucked.
I mean, we know that there's a very, very seedy side to the business that we want to be in, the profession we want to be in. But the thing is like, just to see how they get swept up in it and how just stories and narratives change so easily and how things can get so blown out of proportion to the point where it's just really unsettling and just scary. a lot of ways, that's a reflection on our society today. It's true that the media does actually act that way.
In many different ways. In many different ways and many different avenues.
And so it's, you know, this movie, it's weird because, you know, it's based on a book, obviously, but my God, that does it feel like something that legitimately, like, could happen in today's day and age. And a lot of elements of this movie are things that have happened, which is really frightening to think about. But, you know, I mean, like, I don't know if I would give it a 9, I think, on my scale. I think it's another movie I'm probably going to give it 8.5. I think it's one of those where I'm like, I'll go back and I'll probably rewatch it. I might not watch it all the way through because it's just disturbing. but it's definitely something that I think I'll come back to. I'm like, wow, that, like, the acting in it is what makes it really, you know, really, really good. But it is a hard watch. It's brutal. But that's what makes it so good in a way. Like, we're Americans. You know, we gravitate towards kind of, you know, violence and sexual nature and all this kind of stuff like that. And those are things that we kind of, you know, embrace. But man, is that definitely, it's, you know, if this movie is not for the faint of heart. You know, if you love a good thriller movie, for anybody listening, if you love a good thriller movie, I mean, there's a lot of thriller movies you can watch, but if you want something that's a real, gritty thriller, this is one you have to watch. It's worth it. So I think I got to give it an 8.5 after it's all said and done.
A couple other things. Gillian Flynn, she not only wrote the book, but she wrote the screenplay. Take notes, J.K. Rowling. Please take notes. Please. that's how you write a screenplay of your damn books. My blood is boiling.
J.K. Rowling didn't write any of her scripts for the movies other than Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, what I'm specifically talking about is Fantastic Beasts. That's what I'm specifically focused on. My blood is boiling even just talking about it. This movie made me. I was telling my mom this morning. I was like, I'm still angry. I thought me sleeping it off would help. I'm still angry. It's gonna take me a while. And that's one of the things too. I love movies that it just takes you a while to like process it. Really, like a lot of movies about suicide are like that. Like Room, Room gave me a panic attack. Room 2017 literally gave me a panic attack in the middle of the movie. I'm like, that's a great film. And because of that, because I love emotional movies. And now this is one of my favorite films of all time. It gets a 9.5. Because it's just like, I love emotions. I love when you can be like, when you can be so sucked in. There are so many parts in this movie where I was so sucked in. I was like, Robert, remember you're watching a movie here. This isn't real life. Don't go throwing your remote onto the damn TV. But like it teeters on that, and it's spectacular because of that. It is, my initial reaction was like, what the fuck, Shane? Why did you make what the fuck did you make us do? Fuck. But I also am like thankful that you, because I don't think it would have taken me so much longer to see this. Until we're doing it on the show. So I'm glad we did this, but I was like, holy shit. But no, I'm realizing that thriller and mystery is kind of becoming one of my favorite genres just because it's, I just love the emotion of these films. I really, really, really do. And this film tops it pretty much all for me because I think it's going to be a bit, maybe like a couple weeks before that anger really subsides, because that's how damn good this movie was. Shane, what's your letter grade here?
You know, I think I gave it its praises, but I will say I feel like it drags a little bit too long towards the end, and then by the end it does get a little predictable, but. So for that, I think I'd give it an A-. But still really, really solid.
Next week,
A-, is great.
Yeah, no, that's great. Next week, we're doing another movie that we are all going to rewatch. It's Joker. Joker. What Joker 2019? This yes. This is a movie that Shane and I were talking about in our chat earlier today. There are so many scenes that are just seeped into my brain, and they just pop up every time. Right, Brandon. Like that's the case for this film.
Yeah, this movie I saw it in theaters. So, and I also saw it again after it came out, and I will be watching it now for the third time. So I love this movie. Also, it has a lot of connections to New Jersey. It's been, you know, a part of it being filmed. You know, their Arkham Asylum.
We'll deep dive into all of that. We will absolutely do that next week.
So that's gonna be fun to talk about next week. Rob, you know you've seen it. I think we've all seen it, but I mean to see it again, I'm excited for that. I want to watch this again, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating film, in a lot of ways. Shane, I know you already watched it a couple weeks, and you finally have like a definitive opinion on this film. So, yeah, next Sunday.
I
didn't
know what I thought about this movie for. It took me to my third time to finally decide if I like it or not.
Which is I'm not gonna ask anything else because I'm just excited to see how we view this on a rewatch. And of course this is part of our two movie series of watching comic book movies, quote unquote comic movies, with the new ones coming out. So next week we're doing Joker, and then week 7 we're doing Venom, Let There Be Carnage. So a much different kind of dichotomy there. But that being said, Joker next week is going to be super, super interesting. And I'm also watching Agatha All Along. And I'm like, bro, this horror stuff's going to get me ready for It when we do It during Halloween. It 2017.
Oh, yeah.
Like, holy shit. I'm ready for that. But that's a little preview of what's coming up on our schedule. But for Will, for Shane, for Brandon, for myself, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sticking with us through some very, very small technical difficulties. We're figuring this stuff out as we go along. But thank you guys. And we will see you all on Monday for a 2-game Monday Night Football double, which is the worst scheduling on human earth, but that's it. We'll get to it tomorrow. But yeah, thank you guys. And we'll see you all tomorrow.
Take care, everybody.
Yes, sir. Have a good one, everybody.